And welcome everybody to the Hangout in the Holy Land, the official podcast for landgrantholyland.com, the internet's free premier resource for all things Ohio State news and Ohio State athletics. You can follow us on Twitter at landgrant33. We are on Facebook. Our podcast is now on this new fancy new portal. If you go to itunes.com/SBNation, that will pull up all of the SB Nation podcasts. We're right there. Give us a listen. Give us a review if you like the show. If you don't like the show, we'll give you your money back. But every one of those little reviews helps. It makes the show a little bit more visible and accessible to everybody. I am your host, Matt Brown, and I'm joined here by our editor-in-chief here of Land Grant Holy Land, Luke Zimmerman. Luke, how are you?
I'm doing great, Matt. Thanks for having me back.
You bet. In a couple of minutes here, we are going to be joined by a known Oregon fan, known Oregon expert. Many of you are probably aware of his work. We'll be chatting with SB Nation's Dan Rubenstein. You probably know him from the Solid Verbal and also many of Easy Call and many other college football videos across our network. He's an Oregon grad. He's going to help break things down a little bit here. Now that we're a little bit more composed, we're a little bit more put together from our more hysterical show that we recorded at like 2 o'clock in the morning on New Year's when Ohio State defeated Alabama to move into the inaugural national championship game here from a playoff. Luke, has that feeling of wonderment and anything worn off a little bit now, or what's your state of mind?
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly I can't remember the last time I was that euphoric about a sporting event. Maybe Michigan Ohio State 2006. Or possibly, you know, the Ohio State Miami game in 2002. There's little things that come close in short memory. I will say I'm a little bit on a euphoric high. I grew up in Central Texas, and my childhood hero, Craig Biggio, was just elected to the Hall of Fame. So not quite the same as beating Alabama, but given how stodgy and ridiculous pro baseball writers are with their gatekeeping, I think that's a little bit of a W. Maybe not quite as big, but I think it took more than 24 hours for me to even feel like it was real. I rewatched the game the very next morning, and it still didn't feel like it was a thing that happened. I kept having to pinch myself. But yeah, it's dawned on me, and it's still a really weird game. Like, man, I love this Ohio State team for a lot of reasons, but I don't know that I ever thought that this was the team that would do this.
No, I think every bit of conventional wisdom seemed to think that next year's Ohio State team is the one that's best, and maybe that's still true. That's best suited to win a national championship, given the crazy injury luck that Ohio State's had this year, and just the youth at every or almost every key position. Most of these guys are coming back next year. You would think that. I'm with you. It's been nuts. I watched the game the next day as well. I think I maybe slept 2 hours, and for the first time in months, like that was because I was wired up, not because my kid was wired up. So that's exciting, and it's crazy to look at this kind of from afar to see how just jacked up everyone else is. Like right before we hopped on this podcast here, I just got off the phone with the city government in Urbana, Ohio, which is this little small town that I'd never been there. I'd only heard of it because it was in Little Giants, and they're changing their name to Urban, Ohio for the 12th. There's another town in Ohio that's changing their name. It's just sweeping everywhere. It's very exciting and new.
Yeah, I think something that comes to mind is the UConn blog. SB Nation is appropriately on their UConn blog. Their manager, Amon Kidway, and I were having a conversation right after they won the national title. And I think I asked him, frankly, like, did you ever think, a month ago that this was the team, the UConn team that you were watching that would win the national title? And he said, of course not. And I don't know if it's that improbable. I think this Ohio State team has the pieces, obviously, to do this run that they're on. And they may well not complete the deal, which would be disappointing. But I think given how this year has gone, I like winning. I want every Ohio State team to win a national title every year in every sport, non-rev up. But I think you don't want to ever say it would be okay, but I think you'd be able to deal with it.
Well, one person who I think is going to be able to help us make a little bit more sense about whether Ohio State has a chance to finish the deal here is the aforementioned Mr. Rubenstein, who is joining us on the phone here now. Dan, how are you, buddy?
I'm great. I'm sweaty because I just went for a run. It's at 70 degrees and sunny in California. I'm sure it's real similar in D.C. I'm doing well. How you guys doing?
Yeah, Dan, so this is the start here of a tradition unlike any other. When it snows 3 inches in Washington, D.C., and the infrastructure in the nation's capital and the wealthiest country in the history of the world shuts down. So,
it's a complete meltdown. It's like Washington, D.C. is on a terrible, terrible message board when it snows.
So I was kind of expecting this when you gave us a call. So I mean this in the best possible way. Please go to hell.
No. I think it's so warm here. It almost feels like, you know what I mean?
How soon are you getting out to Dallas?
I will be in Dallas. I actually leave first thing early tomorrow morning. I think I have a 7:30 a.m. flight. So as you know, a lot of the SB Nation video crew and editorial crew is going to be down there, pumping out all sorts of fun content. That's what we churn out here at SB Nation, fellas.
Hashtag content.
Hashtag content. Hashtag strat. So we will be doing stuff, I guess, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. So it's going to be really fun.
Yeah, well, I do have bad news for you, buddy. It's a high of 35 in DFW right now.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's people don't think about it because people don't think about it because it's Texas, but the Metroplex gets surprisingly frigid. There was like an ice storm at the Super Bowl when they had that at Cherry World.
That sounds like big time.
Am I going to be seeing you guys there?
I think there's TBD. Let's just put it that way. Plan for us not to be there, but one or both of us may mysteriously materialize at the last possible second. Just much like Ohio State's national title hopes, we will just appear out of seemingly thin air.
Yeah. Okay. Good. When they show up, I will say, "Oh, well, that was unexpected a month ago."
So, Dan, let's get right into it. I mean, you have watched, every Oregon team for some time, and you certainly have a level of familiarity that our traditional listeners probably don't. I don't think we have too many Pac-12 aficionados, much less Oregon experts amongst our rank and file listening to this delightful podcast. Well, what's the crash course? What can we expect from the 2014 Oregon Ducks?
You can expect a lot of speed and a lot of precision. And as you mentioned, I've been following Oregon for quite some time. I was a freshman in 2001, many moons ago. And whereas Oregon has had better players at different positions, they've had better corners, they've had better offensive linemen, they've had better defensive linemen. They haven't had the level of athleticism as a group as they have this year, perhaps on both sides of the ball. And they are beat up. They're without the guy that they thought would be starting at left tackle, tight end, their lockdown corner, and Ifo Ekwuelomu, their number one and now seemingly number two receiver, are both out. But the big difference between this team and, say, the team that went to the national championship in 2010, aside from having the best quarterback Oregon has ever had as a program, is the fact that they do go too deep everywhere with tall, strong, athletic. And I know Ohio State might have the edge in terms of pure talent according to star rankings and how deep they might be with Urban Meyer recruiting. But as for Oregon, they are running the most efficient offense in recent college football history, at least at the pace that they're running, with the deepest, most athletic group. And defensively, they're at a much higher level. They go, 6'6", 6'7", 6'8", across the defensive line. And they're as complete or more complete a team than Oregon has ever had.
Yeah. So Luke and I were actually just talking about this morning about how ridiculously efficient and fast the Oregon offense is. And it, mm-hmm. it seems crazy that somebody, that a team that runs as many plays as Oregon does, doesn't turn the ball over. Mariota is almost flawless like this with avoiding turnovers. Now, since you've had a chance to watch every Oregon game, and seen where the team has been weaponized on offense and where they've maybe slowed down a little bit. If you were to hypothetically give advice to a defensive coordinator, what is the game plan to try and slow down Oregon? Does anything work other than just keeping the football away from them, or has there been something in particular that's given them some trouble?
Even keeping the football away from Oregon seems like somewhat of a lost cause. We saw Florida State, really – they played conservatively defensively, Oregon did, against the Seminoles. And Oregon just waited, bided their time, and eventually Florida State started pressing a little bit. They forced turnovers. They kept everything in front of them. A lot of people point to Rashad Greene and the matchup he had against an Ifo Ekwuelomu-less Oregon defense. And everything was sort of kept in front. So what I would do against the Oregon offense, if I were Ohio State or any of these teams, is it's on a per-play basis. It's all about patience. It's all about, and I assume Ohio State their defense has somewhat seen a lot of tempo with the way the offense can play, albeit, you know, yeah. I imagine Ohio State's offense is a little bit limited with Cardale Jones in terms of playbook. But what I would do against the Oregon offense is patience. It's the mental focus, because it's, you know, a lot of people point to the tempo sort of, you know, gassing opponents, but it really also is the mental errors that add up when you are tired, and it's misreading keys, misreading lanes. And so, honestly, the teams that have beaten Oregon the past 3, 4, 5 years with the Chip Kelly and Mark Helfrich system in place are the teams that have won up front with minimal pressure. So it's, you know, getting pressure with just Michael Bennett and Joey Bosa and getting into the backfield and sort of disrupting there. So, you know, Corey Grant, Darren Lee, all these guys can move around and make plays. And it's succeeding horizontally. It's beating Oregon to the edge. It's winning lateral battles. And it's honestly the best teams tackle well in space. And if you can tackle Oregon well in space, you have a chance, because if you don't, it adds up very quickly, and 6 yards turns into 23 and 12 yards turn into like 87.
Yeah, we have seen this movie before against teams that are not as fast and as disciplined and as technical as Oregon is. I would imagine right. that no matter what, people are going to get to see a lot of points.
So I got a question for you, yeah. Dan, because we were just poised this by a reporter at another outlet that we chatted with earlier today. Can you stop Marcus Mariota? Is that possible? I mean, we know Florida State kind of did it for like a quarter and a half, 2 quarters. Like, is that right. a thing that is doable?
It's doable. We've seen a couple of teams do it, albeit, you know, last season in 2013, Stanford and Arizona had the benefit of having Marcus Mariota with a torn MCL. So he was not stepping into his throws. He was not looking to extend plays or run with the same efficiency and sort of reckless abandon as we've seen this season. So the way that you do quote unquote stop him is making him uncomfortable, beating the offensive line. And it's also, you know, the term confused is a little bit strange, but the Arizona team that beat them last season and this season, granted with injury issues on the offensive line this year and his own last year, they were able to confuse him a little bit. There were times where he could make passes and step into them and make passes in a rhythm, in a clean pocket, and he hesitated. So I think, you know, obviously Ohio State isn't going to be running a lot of 3-3-5, but if there are some sort of stunts or, you know, let's say a nose tackle sort of drops into coverage short and, you know, can pick off a slant, stuff like that, there are times where he has looked a little bit hesitant, and that is splitting hairs and nitpicking, because those times are very few and far between.
Yeah, you're going to have to split hairs pretty thin if you're going to look at flaws over the last season.
I mean, I know we know that Ohio State hasn't seen any offenses like the Ducks. Have the right. Ducks seen anything like Ohio State and Urban Meyer this season?
In some ways, they've seen elements. Obviously, they've played against some mobile quarterbacks. We saw what Brett Hundley is capable of doing at times. I would not compare Brett Hundley physically to Cardale Jones. Obviously, he's a more experienced, more polished passer over time than what we've seen with Jones. I think, you know, Ezekiel Elliott and what he poses on the ground is a huge thing. Oregon has done well in the past couple of seasons with their defensive scheme against the run. They weren't fantastic against an enormous offensive line and a couple of very talented backs in Florida State, but eventually they were still able to prevent huge plays. And I think Oregon, their defense is fast enough where if they're able to tackle in space, because I imagine Ezekiel Elliott's going to get his, I imagine Cardale Jones is going to pop a few long passes. He has the cannon. But I think Oregon's going to do a pretty good job of keeping things in front of them. The way Ohio State wins this game really is going to be if Cardale Jones is patient. If he, you know, is okay with taking an 8-yard comeback route, if he's okay with, you know, a 4 or 5 minute drive and doesn't press too much on a stage like this is. But yeah, Oregon, you know, we go back to 2010, it's a similar scheme, different players, obviously, with Cam Newton in the championship game. They completely eliminated him and his role, both moving the chains with his legs and really wasn't able to move it too much through the air as well. So I think Oregon will be prepared. I think on both sides, the key word for Ohio State is just going to be patience and not to press too much.
I want to talk a little bit more about that defensive scheme, since I know that it's been a long time since you sure. and I watched an Oregon game together. But I remember around that middle of the season that it seemed like you weren't the biggest Don Pelham fan in the world, and sure. and that there was you know some skepticism about some of Oregon's front seven defense. And for me, watching them against Florida State, and especially that second game against Arizona, where they looked absolutely lights out, what has changed throughout Oregon's defense? Has it evolved throughout the year? Has the coaching staff made an adjustment? Was it just a matter of getting healthy? Or why does it seem to be better than it was around the middle of the year?
One of the things with Oregon's defense is it typically does get better over the course of the season because of the pace of their offense. They're forced to rotate in so many guys on defense to keep legs fresh, which you get uneven results with that early on in the middle of the year, just because there are so many just people coming in and out of that defense and that are still trying to understand their roles. But by the end of the season, you see depth become a lot more established. They rotate in a lot of these young guys that, you know, it's tough and they make mental errors. We see a couple of lapses and brain farts here and there. For scheme, I think the coaches figured out, especially at linebacker, Oregon has 4 to 5 linebackers that they sort of, and I'm talking about more traditional inside linebackers. They're outside linebackers. A lot of them are sort of rush end hybrid defensive end types. They're middle linebackers and they're guys that are in the middle of the field. I think they've done a very good job of figuring out sort of situational substitutions with run pass guys. Guys like Joe Walker and Danny Mattingly have been very good against the run, sound tacklers, filling holes. And also, you know, Eric Armstead, when he's healthy, he's the big sort of 3-4 defensive end along with Eric Armstead. They've gotten very, very good at sort of absorbing double teams and doing their best. And the big thing, and then when you have Derek Malone and Rodney Hardrick, who are better sort of in coverage, not as great against the run, I think they've really figured out a good balance of substitution and figuring out the strengths of those inside guys. Because, yeah, as you said, earlier on and midway through the season, there'd be a third and 23. There was a huge third and 23 against Arizona. They rushed 3, and a new Solomon ran for 25 yards. And those types of errors have really slowed down. They've been very good tackling the open field. It really is just sort of Don Pelham getting better as a first-year coordinator, figuring out his personnel, and the team simply getting more experience and more reps and more confidence.
Sure. Do you think that the way that this season has gone and the performance that Oregon has shown here throughout the year, does that change the ceiling of this coaching staff to you? I don't remember you being somebody who was anti-Helfrich.
Right.
But there seemed to be, and not just you, but I think throughout lots of
sure.
Oregon internet, that maybe it was like maybe the ceiling of this staff is a little bit lower than things were under Kelly. Have you changed your mind about how you feel about any of the coordinators or Helfrich?
Oh, certainly. No, I'm pleasantly surprised. I'm thoroughly impressed with what they've done, not just by the fact that they've improved, the fact that this team appears to be so much more prepared for games than they were last season. And I think it was pretty clear that there was some personality conflict with Nick Aliotti in sort of between tenures, and perhaps he wasn't the best fit as defensive coordinator anymore. So there was a feel early on in the season of feeling out new staff. Of course, there's a couple of new position coaches from when Mark Helfrich took over and their time getting there, the sort of feet wet. Ron Aiken at defensive line and Matt Lubick, who's done a great job at wide receiver coach. It's been a pleasant surprise with the Pac-12 championship and the way they played against Florida State, that Oregon, after last season, with what we saw, their lack of preparation before the Arizona game in Tucson, with their sort of struggles to adjust against Stanford last season, with how much this coaching staff has sort of invigorated the personnel and sort of with Marcus Mariota, it's always easier when you have the best quarterback in the country. But this is a team that's confident that not only that they can play with anybody, that they can run away from anybody in the country. And I think after last week, that much is clear. The coaching staff deserves a ton of credit for the sort of week in and week out focus and confidence. And, you know, Mark Helfrich before the season, last year, he was an Alamo Bowl coach. He won 11 games, yes.
Yeah.
But to deal with the type of pressures that, you know, Nick Saban, Urban Meyer, all of these guys deal with year in and year out playing on the stage, and for Mark Helfrich to acquit himself like this, even if they lose to Ohio State, has been beyond impressive.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. I think I've gone through a similar reevaluation of what the staff is capable of, and the consistency and the growth throughout the season is really very impressive.
Yeah, I do have one question, because I know that Chip Kelly, you know, when certainly, you know, your particular I guess corner of the college football internet is not necessarily contingent on covering these sort of press events and things like that. But I know Kelly has this one kind of personality in these media events. And I was taking in Mark Helfrich's press conference remotely yesterday. And just like the guy was so unbelievably, I don't know if transparent is the right word, but maybe like approachable or like real. Is that like, what's the dichotomy of the personalities, like going from a Chip Kelly to like, you know, almost like a regular guy as your head coach?
It's been really interesting. And one of the big advantages any coach has, if he's a coordinator and has some time to sort of get to know a program from within and then ascend to head coach, is you sort of get a sense for what works and you sort of tweak it to your own whatever needs and likes, whatever. But at the same time, you really understand the culture. And whereas Chip Kelly is sort of a more brash, fast-talking, Belichickian in a little ways and how sort of secretive he would be, and Mark Helfrich does seem to connect with people a little bit better in terms of recruiting and does, you know, give off maybe a slightly warmer, more personable exterior. I think the big thing that Helfrich has been able to carry on from Kelly is just the sort of day-to-day culture, whether it's the practice speed, whether it's the way meetings are run, whether it's the way business is handled from an administrative standpoint. So yes, Mark Helfrich does come off differently than Chip Kelly, but it's sort of he's executing the same thing with a smile, but the killer instinct hasn't left Eugene at all. And a lot of it has to do with, you know, Mark Helfrich was game planning for Chip Kelly for the past couple of years. This was not like a, okay, your turn now. He was responsible for a lot of the success they've had these past couple seasons, but it's just been a behind the scenes thing. And now with his face out front, yes, he will crack a little bit more jokes. He does appear to be more approachable, but the whole program is being run almost identically, it appears.
What would have Chip Kelly done if somebody had asked him about Jesus Girls and Marcus Mariota?
He would have laughed. Chip Kelly is secretly hilarious. That's one of the stories. Yeah, Chip Kelly is really, like, he's a funny dude. He's just sort of no nonsense at the same time. But you talk to a lot of people that cover the team, and you talk to the coaches, you talk to the players, and they all sort of say the same thing, that he's very dry but sort of hilarious. And a lot of the coaches talk about, you know, they wish that people could hear some of the stuff that Kelly would say over the headset during games, making fun of people. He's apparently like a funny dude. And so I think he would have taken well to that. But he certainly gives off the exterior of being a little bit more combative and a little bit more protective. And, you know, he always sort of took things as insults about his team and was just maybe a little bit more defensive, I think, than Mark Helfrich.
Shifting gears here just a little bit, you know, before you hopped on, we were talking about how this Ohio State team just didn't feel, I think, like when we think back to the Penn State game, can we ever have imagined seeing this team the national title? I know Oregon went in with much higher expectations, not necessarily higher expectations, it's Ohio State, but you know, did you see this when, you know, thinking back to earlier in the year, Michigan State, maybe even a couple weeks after that? I know we watched a game with you, like Matt mentioned, and you were not super thrilled with the direction of at least how things were looking against UCLA, I believe it was. Like, did you see this as being a potential championship team, or is this just like just sort of enjoying the ride?
I definitely did not see this Oregon team as championship caliber. I loved what Marcus Mariota was able to do and has shown himself able to do on the field. I was skeptical of the coaching staff. Skeptical really of the offensive line. And I'm still sort of amazed, as I'm sure you guys are as well, coming off of the Virginia Tech game, with how far the Ohio State offensive line has come, just in terms of giving whoever's behind them time and also opening up holes for any number of talented running backs. I've been extremely impressed with Oregon losing their left tackle before the season, with, you know, Jake Fisher, Andre Uretagoyena, Hronis Gratzu, all these guys, Matt Pearson, all these, they've had to plug in so many different parts of the offensive line. And ultimately I thought that was going to unglue them against somebody inferior. And the fact that they've been able to not just survive that, but, you know, take advantage of the depth that they've created at offensive line. I'm still sort of shocked that Oregon is in this position, but sometimes it's not a matter of, is this the best Oregon team we've seen in the past 3 or 4 years? It's a matter of, is this the best Oregon team given the climate in college football, given all of the context, and given the depth that they've been able to build? Surprising, but makes sense.
Something a lot of Ohio State fans, you know, keep telling themselves. I don't know if they're setting their expectations low in doing so, or if they're just trying to be Ohio State fans, is that, like, this wasn't the team that was supposed to, you know, be the national title team. You look at the depth chart, there's so many, you know, redshirt freshmen, sophomores. And I think when you look at Oregon's Heisman Trophy winning quarterback aside, there's a lot of youth there as well. Do you think that like this team might be poised to sort of get on a real roll here, whether they win or not?
Yeah, they are certainly poised. It's one of those things where they're all set for 2015 outside of quarterback, which is, you know, the point guard of this offense, especially with how fast and how quickly they play. Yeah, Oregon's in fantastic shape, and I don't know if it's how obvious or how known it is nationally, but Mark Helfrich has actually done an excellent job recruiting, more so than Chip Kelly really ever did. And not that Chip Kelly didn't like recruiting, he always sort of connected with kids, but it's the effort that Mark Helfrich and his staff, bringing in Matt Lovick, who's been a fantastic recruiter, Eric Chenander, the outside linebackers coach, he's been fantastic. And the big thing is they are going after kids harder all over the country, and Oregon really has established itself because of Mike Vellotti and Chip Kelly as this big national brand. And the big thing is, I'm sure Ohio State doesn't practice slowly. The big thing with how Oregon practices is so many more players get reps. If a team, you know, it normally gets in, you know, 100 reps in practice or something like that, Oregon's probably getting in 225. So there's so many more opportunities for youth to come in that by the time they're done as freshmen, redshirt freshmen, sophomores, they're more like 4 or 5 year players with how many times they've seen the field. So I imagine it's very similar, as Urban Meyer has been sort of tagging along with Chip Kelly these past couple off seasons and had a secret crush on Mr. Kelly, going to Eugene, going to bowl practices, I think in the Fiesta Bowl in Arizona a couple of years ago. So I think the outlook of each of these teams, even though Ohio State might have a higher overall talent level, is pretty similar considering how much depth has been built up.
You certainly don't need to remind us about Helfrich's and Oregon's relentless recruiting, given all of the attention right now that's about a certain quarterback on Ohio State who may be injured and could potentially be looking to take his talent somewhere else. With Oregon kind of perennially being named as a possible
look, buddy, I'm just saying, we've got 3 quarterbacks. You've got none for next year.
Let's make a deal.
What do you guys want? You want a couple coaches? You want an offensive lineman?
I think we need an offensive coordinator. You got one of those?
We do have Scott Frost. I can't imagine he's going to be long for Eugene. I honestly, like, I joked about that on Twitter. I think I'm not sure exactly when that happened. It was probably as JT Barrett was really establishing himself as a real Heisman candidate later on in the season. And apparently it's a real thing that Braxton Miller has been talked about various schools. What's the latest, I think, is LSU, which seems like it'd be kind of a disaster. Like, why would you go to LSU? Like, I could understand, you know, maybe going to Florida with a whole new, you know, regime. Doug Nussmeier succeeded with dual threat guys at Washington. He did a great job at Alabama. Didn't do a fantastic job at Michigan, but sometimes you need a quarterback to run an offense. Oregon makes sense. Florida State could make sense, although they run a decidedly pro-style system. I've heard Duke. If I had to guess, Oregon would bring in a similar way that they brought in Jeremiah Masoli as a full qualifier from a JC sort of later on in the process. I would imagine that Oregon is going to look to bring in a graduate transfer, whether or not that Braxton Miller sort of to be decided. But with what Oregon has, I think they've got like the number 1, 4, and 7 or the number 1, 4 all-purpose backs coming in. They've got their entire offensive line, I believe, other than their center back. Their defense is largely back. All of the, you know, they get healthier at receiver with Devin Allen and Braylon Addison coming back. It's, if you are a dual threat guy, whoever you are, wherever you're playing and you are a graduate transfer, it'd be very difficult not to give Oregon a long, hard look with what they've been able to do with, I mean, Jeremiah Masoli and Darren Thomas are not NFL quarterbacks, and they were Heisman contenders. It'd be difficult to imagine a dual threat guy not taking a look at Oregon with the talent on hand and the coaching staff on hand.
Yeah, for what it's worth, I think Luke and I are in agreement at this point that we don't think Braxton Miller is going anywhere. We think that there's some things outside of just potential schematic fit that are going to play into this decision. But of all the places that he has been purportedly tied to from people outside of the Ohio State program, Oregon by far makes the most sense. Like going to LSU
So Ohio State will have 3 quarterbacks next season. What is the advantage of Braxton Miller staying when perhaps he won't be guaranteed or perhaps shouldn't be guaranteed the starting spot?
So I think the big thing is besides just familiarity, he has a kid there, family,
okay,
proximity to home. Besides all that, is the fact of the matter that we don't know that Braxton Miller will ever be a quarterback again. You know, he re-injured a throwing shoulder that caused him to miss this season and undergo a second surgery. Like, what if he's not the same?
So you're thinking like a slot receiver, perhaps?
Yeah, well, I mean, he's going to have to play a different position in the NFL almost assuredly either way. So, like,
true,
unless he's just so hell-bent on, you know, proving his bona fides as a quarterback and getting one last run at it, I kind of think that he'll stick around and sort of learn some different, you know, offensive utilities. And, it sounds crazy, and Pete Tamel, who is, you know, attached at the hip to Urban Meyer, is the only person,
right,
besides, I think, us that has, like, even pseudo-reported this. We don't have near the connections that Pete has. I think the most probable scenario, as insane as it sounds, is all three guys coming back. And if there is one coach that you could see designing packages for these guys and, like, actually getting them on the field in the same game, it would be somebody like Urban Meyer.
Yeah.
It sounds crazy and homer, but, like, we literally have heard nothing to suggest otherwise. I think, like,
right,
if we had to bet on any of them leaving, it would be Cardale. JT has too much eligibility, and I think that would be kind of the biggest curveball, as if he was the one that left. I don't think Braxton's going anywhere. And I think, like, besides him having to learn an offense, he won't be healthy, or he won't even be able to play quarterback until July. Do you really want to bring a guy in that's not going to be throwing at full clip while learning a new offense for 1 year? I mean, I think if you can bring in, like, a JUCO junior or somebody like that, it would be better for Oregon. I know that some Florida State pay side is like, Braxton Miller reporting is interested in Florida State, but Florida State's not interested in Braxton Miller, which is just like, okay. The one logical thing they took away from that, though, was that, you know, they want to get their guy that's going to be there longer reps now and, like, take the growing pains,
right,
as opposed to, like, just getting a fly-by-night rental. It's not impossible, and there's so much smoke that you have to think that someone associated with Braxton is, you know, making some calls and doing their due diligence.
Sure.
But
yeah,
we've heard
that makes sense.
We've heard nothing from the Miller camps, nothing from the Ohio State side. And it's not that, like, this isn't like a, you know, Oakland's still in play. This isn't one of those, like, denial or, you know, agenda scenarios.
Right.
Like, Braxton's gone. Certainly, you know, I think there would be a small percentage of the fan base that would be very resentful and bitter and feel like scorned lovers. But the rest of us would respect the fact that the guy won two, you know, Big Ten Player of the Year awards. The guy got Ohio,
yep,
State to a Big Ten championship. And, you know, basically died on the field physically against Clemson and, like, was really taking some shots there and almost led Ohio State to a win there. So I think, you know, if the time comes, we'll you know, write it up and wish him the best. But as of now, I think he's staying. So I think, yeah, you guys' best bet may be looking for, like you said, sort of like a second or third year transfer from, you know, the same path that you guys have gone,
yeah,
on before.
Maybe Jay Keeps. You know, I think he might have another year of eligibility somewhere, and
sure,
he's working on his PhD, so that
yeah,
could potentially be a good fit.
I'll take it.
What about Rob Bolden? Is he
is there another force
more years of eligibility?
Eastern Michigan or something like that?
They're working out Rob Bolden and Tate Forcier, and they're gonna see what's what.
Oh man, that's rough. One other question here on a different vein. After watching the Ohio State Alabama game, which was something of, like, the pinnacle of punting in sport, and two teams that are renowned for special teams play, I guess with Ohio State less so with their punt return game, what can fans expect from Oregon on special teams? Is this a team that excels in kickoff and punt returns? They have a great kicker. What's sort of the book on that side of the ball for the Ducks?
It's a good question. Oregon hasn't had to rely on special teams this year all that much. And obviously, we saw the past couple of seasons, big losses to Stanford and USC on the foot of their kicker, Alejandro Maldonado. This year, it's, I believe, a freshman walk-on, Aiden Schneider, who's been handling field goals. And he's actually been good. It's nothing that I think Oregon fans are confident in. You know, if he's lining up for a 44-yard field goal down two with 3 seconds to go, people are not going to be as confident in him as, say, Roberto Aguayo at Florida State. But as for the complete special teams, they've been good in kick coverages. They put a lot of speed on the field. I don't know if you remember when DeAnthony Thomas was playing gunner against Wisconsin late in the game. They have no problem doing stuff like that. Their coverage has been pretty good. Their kick returns are not perhaps on the level of what they've been these past couple of seasons with DeAnthony Thomas, but Charles Nelson, the true freshman from Florida, has come in and been a really good punt returner. And they really have the ability to change the field. Anytime there's just that much speed on the field, that returner, you are going to see, you know, field and field position being flipped. But it's nothing in the way of where perhaps duck teams of the past have been. But I think there's more confidence in kicking and punting perhaps than there have been these past couple seasons. But nothing that I would feel dramatically about in either direction.
Okay. All right. I'll get you out of here on this, and then we'll see if Luke has anything else. I was kind of surprised to see Oregon's senatorial choice and going with the whites, letting Ohio State get the wear their home uniforms here. Do you like this call? And, you know, looking at all of the, I'm sure, tens of thousands of uniform combinations that Oregon has available, do you have a particular favorite?
I do have a favorite. The whites are fine. I would have preferred for there to be either the numbers or the wings or whatever with the green or the yellow, something like that.
Sure.
But I think the whites look good. I especially like it when it's the full whites. I think they're wearing white with like gray or silver pants or whatever they call them, like the hypercarbon pants. I prefer the full stormtrooper look. And I'm not sure that Oregon chose. I think both uniform combinations came out before the playoffs. And so it's the sort of thing, I believe Ohio State wore their whites against Alabama, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, so I think it's being flipped so that each playoff team in the championship gets to wear their sort of whites and their colors. So would have been nice to see some green and yellow, but I think they'll still look sleek as hell. They sort of look like somebody, I don't even remember, said something like, well, if they win, it looks like they'll all be wearing tuxedos when they eventually accept the trophy. So I guess there's that. It's fine. I don't feel as dramatically about team colors. My favorite combination, I really like when either they do the throwback, like the green and yellow, how they looked in like 1994 when they wore those against Washington. I thought that was really slick. But anytime they sort of have a combination, I like the green shade that's more of like the apple, like the shade that they wore in the Rose Bowl. Like if they wore that Rose Bowl jersey, that like neon apple green with yellow pants, I thought that'd be pretty slick.
Does Casey Barton still pick the combinations in the regular season?
Ooh, that's a good question. I don't know. I really don't know who's doing the combos. I saw something at the beginning of the year that the seniors were in charge of picking the combos, but maybe that's the seniors in concert with Casey. I don't know. I really haven't seen anything.
I'm going to guess that a certain birdie from a company not too far from you guys is the one who ultimately made the call on this combination. But merchandise to be moved for both teams, and you know, we get to see different color combinations. So if nothing else, I think both teams' alternates look pretty sharp.
Yeah.
I know Ohio State fans are wearing their 2002, technically 1968, but the same ones they had in 2002, the gray, red, or in this case, gray and white and black stripes, as opposed to the trestle move to this 1980s, kind of same as the helmet stripe. And those have only brought pain in the form of the 2006 and 2007 national championship game losses. So if you want to talk about uniform curses and mojo, I think the power of the gray stripes, man, they've got what, like seven national titles in them? Maybe they probably didn't even have uniforms in Ohio State.
I think they're wearing
potato sacks.
Donated like, shit from Princeton or something,
orange
won,
like,
and pink.
Their 1928 title or whatever.
But, yeah.
Cool, man. Well, hey, Dan, thanks so much for hopping on the horn with us. All the best in Dallas. If we see you, we see you. If not, we will be sharing your content from afar. And, We're looking forward to this week. Are you going to, you know, just be like mainlining Xanax Monday night? Like, how bad of a wreck were you during the Rose Bowl?
I was, you know, it's one of those things where we've seen Florida State come back so much and pour things on in the second half that even when they were up 30, even when Oregon was up 30, I was still like, be calm, everybody, be calm.
I think Matt was saying it at halftime, like, we were all like, Oregon, I think, is positioned pretty well. And Matt's like, no, Florida State's got this.
I'm not a smart man. I definitely thought this was going to be another one of those like stupid fourth quarter Florida State wins by two, and then you know they turn the ball over four more times. Looks like they're finally dead.
I will say this: I was very confident, and I think this relates to the championship game. I was gaining confidence seeing Oregon even before they were turning Florida State over, and even when the scoreboard sort of indicated that it was a game, it was 25-20, when it was 18-13, whatever, Oregon was putting together 4- and 5-minute drives on offense that were ending in touchdowns. And if you're an Ohio State fan, which I imagine 99.9% of the people listening to this are, if Oregon's putting together 4- or 5-minute drives, even if they only end in field goals, That means they're pushing Ohio State's defense around and keeping Ohio State's defense on the field. That's one of those things that sets up a second half where the defense just throws their hands up in the air. And a lot of people talk about Florida State quitting. I don't think it's because Florida State had a propensity to quit or are mentally weak or anything like that. I don't look at that as a thing against Florida State players. I think if Oregon's putting 4, 5, 6 yards per carry on the ground in the first half and not getting explosion plays, that's almost more dangerous than Oregon scoring quickly, because there's only so much you can do tired against this Oregon defense in a third quarter.
That's just one more thing for Ohio State fans to be terrified about.
That is true.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this multiple hour long panic attack here on Monday. It'll be great here for everybody.
I wish you two genuine worst of luck.
and I hope that you get a terrible torta on, you know, when you're down there. So
how dare you, sir? This is not personal on my end.
Dan, thanks so much for joining us. Yeah. Godspeed and worst of luck Monday night.
Yeah, real quick, where can in case the good listeners here are not familiar with all of your work, where is the best place to find stuff that you are involved with, you are writing, you are videoing on the internet?
Yeah. Well, SBNation.com is a major website in America and the world, available internationally. So
it's free.
Tell me more. If you see a video on SB Nation on a college football page, there are pretty good odds that I am in it. And I apologize for that. I host a little podcast called The Solid Verbal, which is on solidverbal.com. You can download it on iTunes, and you can follow us at Solid Verbal, like the thing it says on rivals.com, Solid Verbal. So That's the majority of the places. I guess you can follow me on Twitter, Dan Rubenstein. I talk about Taylor Swift and tacos a lot. So if that's of interest to you, let's be pals.
Subscribe. All right. Excellent. Yeah. Dan, I appreciate it. Looking forward to seeing what you guys cook up with. Looking forward to seeing what the Solid Verbal cooks up with over the next couple of days. And enjoy yourself down there.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. I look forward to it.
Okay. Godspeed, sir. Safe travels.
Thank you.
All right, that's our friend Dan. I definitely feel like I know 72% more about Oregon all over the field than I did here before. Very, very informative. Luke, do you got anything else here that we got to hit before we let these good people go?
No, I think Dan made us a lot wiser, a lot more knowledgeable about the Ducks. I'm looking forward to Monday's game with all the excitement of getting on like a 20-hour flight to Australia, because it's just going to be like nothing but turbulence and boredom and just wanting to be done with it until that game kicks off, or I guess until it goes final, right? Win or lose. So this week will be a thing. Hopefully, you know, be sure to check out landgrantholyland.com to help it go by a little bit faster, because it's going to feel like the longest week of everybody's lives. But I can't wait for kickoff. I can't wait. You know, they're so close. I just hope they finish the job. I think it would be an incredible, incredible year. Win or lose, though, I mean, man, this group of seniors, this team, Urban Meyer keeps calling it the closest he's ever seen. It's been one of the most fun to cover, sir.
Yeah. One of the most fun to cover, one of the most fun to watch, especially juxtaposed occasionally to some insufferable Big Ten basketball games. It's great to know that we had this entire fall of watching a team score a gajillion points and overcome a bunch of odds and be this great, entertaining, feel-good story. Hopefully it ends the way that we want it to, but either way, I can think of much worse ways to spend your fall than getting emotionally invested with these guys. We will have a bunch more stuff here on Land Grant Holy Land. Again, you can follow us on Twitter, Land Grant 33. I'm at MattSBN on Twitter. Luke is at LukeZim. You can find the show on Blog Talk Radio. You can find us on iTunes. And now, if you go to iTunes.com/SBNation or iTunes.com/LandGrantHolyLand, we'll pull you right up to our page. If you like the show, please, you know, give us a review. Click on the little 5-star button. That helps more people find it. That means more Ohio State fans. It's good here for everybody. And then our call-in number for the post-game show after the game is 215-383-3986. Everyone, I'm Matt. That's Luke. Thanks for tuning in here. And go Bucks.
Go Bucks.